Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, when you hear the lady saying Blog Talk Radio, you know, yeah, we're over on Blog Talk Radio right now, but we're there for kind of for calls, you know. But today what I want to do, let me mute this over here so I don't get an echo, so many computers running. You know, first off, what's up, Facebook? Waco, Texas, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, ATL. I got to upfront apologize for last week. I'm not going to apologize for it. No, Facebook, y'all full of shit. Every time we do a show where we get into the topic real deep, y'all want to get anal with your algorithms. You know, and that's a good way to say haters, because I see too many people on my page that all of a sudden they're in Facebook jail because they posted something or shared something that's been shared 10,000 times, but they're in Facebook jail. The other 999,000 people are right, but they are. That's cool. I can deal with that. So at the end of this show, I'm going to tell you guys, we'll post a link up on Facebook for any future shows, but we're going to go through YouTube. We're not messing with Facebook anymore because I'm tired of dealing with these pampered people who don't want to have good discussions and want to make a complaint. So that being said, that's the first announcement. We get that out the way. And with that, I'm turning this show over to our co-host, Dr. Corsi Cruz, who is going to moderate, run. She's going to do the thing. And Joe agreed. And I felt that, you know, a lot of people do these shows. They want to make themselves everything. They're all this. They're all that. Look at me. We're not that way on this show. We bring hard facts, and we come at you hard. And we're not scared to come that way. And we'll take it. And if we're messed up, we'll say, I was wrong. Let me fix this or fix that. And we're not afraid to do that. So I did this with Rachel Paperboy, and now I'm doing it with Dr. Corsi Cruz, Dr. Behavior. And I said, you know, and this was a conversation we had today. It wasn't planned out for weeks. I said, you know, I want you to come interview me and Joe. Cass, anything you want, my personal life, my entertainment life, whatever, ask me anything you want, I'll answer. And I called Joe. I said, Joe, you on board? Joe had two-word response. Hell yeah. That's it. So we're going to do what a lot of shows don't want to do. Everybody wants to put stuff up and say this and say that. But we're about what we say. All you politicians, police chiefs, pontificators, preachers, 646-716-4621. I made a special show tonight with the ability to call in. Ask us anything you want. We're not going to argue. We don't have to agree. But here's your chance. You don't have to go to the water cooler or the tithing plate to talk tomorrow. You can do it tonight. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to the host of tonight's show, Dr. Behavior, a.k.a. to everybody in Waco, throw up the W. Dr. Corsi Cruz, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's fun. You called and asked about this. And I was like, hell yeah. I said the same thing. Joe, let's do it. All right. I'm excited to be here with y'all. So I've gotten a couple of weeks to be on the show with y'all and kind of get to know you from that perspective. And then there's always the social media side of things. But I decided tonight, after you asked me what I said I kind of moderate this, we're going to do a little past, present, and future. Okay. So we're going to start with kind of past. Don't look scared, Joe. Come on, Justin. I'm going to start simple, right? But I need for you both to not be humble when you do this. Both of you have decades in policing. You've dedicated your life to that calling. And so I'm just curious, can you share with us some highlights, accolades, just kind of an overview of your career as you've achieved it? Not as you view it, but as you've achieved it, and kind of give everybody who's watching an idea of who you are professionally.
Wow. You want to go first, Stanley?
No. Justin, I will follow your lead, senior.
I'll take that. Wow, that's a very interesting question. Well, I got to tell you, I'm never taking accounting of awards. But there's two reasons for that. One, it's not something I do. Two, a lot of things that I have done never got recognized. And I didn't need them to. I guess that's probably the best way to answer that. I've done some things. Oh, quite a bit. I think the best one, one of the best ones, was I was on patrol, and that come out of the school patrol. You all call it school resource officer. We would call it school officer. And I had what was a passenger van that was snowing, like to beat the band. I see this guy in, at least in my department, you're not supposed to transport citizens. So I saw this guy, he's on the corner, he's a young father, he had a kid in a stroller and another kid, you could see all the snot rolling around his nose. And I just put him in a truck and took him home. I mean, in theory, I could have gotten into a lot of trouble for it. I mean, I never discussed it with anybody else. He asked me, do I owe you things? I said, no, just play it forward at the time.
Okay. How many years have you served your community, Jeff?
30 plus. I just left another position as chief of another department. That's a story for another day, but I was fortunate enough to work with, they didn't work for me, I worked for them. And anyone that, any chief or any supervisor worth their money should be able to say this. The control divisions of all these departments are the backbones of the department, but they don't get the recognition they deserve. So to all those patrolmen and patrolwomen across this country, know that there are some people that appreciate you. So that would be my thing.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, I guess for me, if I had to say, and I don't know what the screen says, okay, if I had to say, you know, I think I came into policing thinking I knew what policing was. I came in like everybody else that comes in. I'm going to enforce laws. I'm going to have a badge and a gun. I'm going to have this blue brotherhood. I'm going to have all these accolades. I'm going to do all this. And then I moved to Waco, and I lived on 1911 North 6th Street. I lived in the hood. Drug dealers lived across the street from me, all around me, and, you know, and but it was what it was. And, you know, when you grow up in the inner city, that's not a phenomenon to you. It is what it is. You adapt and you overcome. And so I get through the academy. I come out in the streets and I'm policing. And like anybody coming into policing, I'm looking at other officers and they're role models and they're doing this and they're doing that and they're making these all these arrests and it's exciting and I'm on the radio listening to car chases. And you want to do that. But there's like this thing in you where you're at that spot and you look over and see that person. It's not exciting, police exciting, but they want to talk to you for a minute. And it may be the loud music. It may be something minor. And for me, you know, we're talking the 90s. So we're talking about the crack cocaine epidemic, shootings everywhere. Waco was far what it is today. For all of you people that want to move to Waco because it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, Magnolia, and Baylor, do some Googling. Because I'm going to tell you, you couldn't give your house away in Waco, Texas in the 90s. We were number one per capita for violent crime in 1995. So you couldn't give it away. And so I'm out there, but I'm dealing with these drug dealers, these prostitutes, these drug addicts, these poor people, these homeless people, all these people that today society would tell me they're bullshit people. Get beyond them. Move on. But they were my neighbors. When I sat on my front porch and drank a beer, they came down the street. And even though I'm out there in cutoff shorts and a T-shirt on my day off in the academy or whatever it was, they said to me, Officer Mason, can I sit down? And somebody I might have put in jail for a crack pipe 5 days ago, I said, hey, what you doing? Nothing. Sit down, have a beer with me. Just sit down, let's talk. I didn't say who's selling dope, who's doing whatever. You doing all right today? What's going on? How you feeling? How you doing? I don't need you to tell me who's selling dope. I live in Dope Central. I already know that. I don't need you to snitch on anybody because guess what? You got to survive. While I get a badge pinned on me because a drug dealer was caught, you're in the ground. That is policing. Commitment to the citizens. Not the ones who live beneath you or made decisions you wouldn't have made, but the ones that you can look at. And this is Stan. This is not, I'm not speaking for Joe, the show, anybody. This show started under the premise that God gave me. He didn't give it to everybody. I don't expect Joe or anybody else to live up to what Stan lives up to during the show. The God I serve told me, yes, you have the highest civil service score in the history of Waco PD. Yes, you were the first minority to ever be Rookie of the Year, in the history of Waco PD. Hello, Waco PD haters. Do your research. That part, okay? I don't talk about it, but you brought it up. I don't beat my own drum. I don't have to.
You are today, though. I need people to know these things about you. People know what they love about you, Sam, but they don't accept, they don't always understand why. They don't understand the foundation and the roots of all of this. So I'll ask both of you a follow-up question to that. When did you know you had the calling to come into policing?
Well, I come from a police family. Father and uncle, law enforcement. My two sisters are one of the county prosecutor, the other was the first black female federal prosecutor in the Northern District of Illinois. My brother was another, it was another issue, though. That's again, another story. But I think public service is in and of itself a calling, as you so aptly state. I think I wanted to be the police because of my father and my uncle. I'm a child of the 50s, so you got to remember, you know, there's an adage that policemen don't go cold, wet, or hungry. Well, there's a reason that black officers didn't go cold, wet, or hungry, because the idea, you know, we call it community policing.
That's right.
Black policemen weren't given cars, so they had to walk the community. That's why you had call boxes and all those things. So you had to walk the community. You had to know a lot better than most. Again, going back to the original question, when did I know? Well, I've been doing some things. I've been in real estate. I tried that. I tried auto sales. And I came and took the test in 81, came on in 82. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the idea of helping people. I enjoyed the fact that there was some discretion that was allowed. And even when I went to the schools, I still had a lot of discretion to this day. There, again, learning from the older policemen, I didn't lock you up. You locked yourself up. So I had instances where I did have power of discretion. I don't think they have the same latitude as I had then. They do now. For instance, I can tell the story now because statute of limitations of quite a few kids I stopped with bags of weed or whatever, and I didn't lock them up. But by order, I should have. But at the time, I still believe I was not going to mess with their career for nickel badge. Now, if you had an ounce of cocaine or needle, well, that's a whole different issue. But I didn't have those problems. But on the street, again, I still had discretion. Again, those powers are gone now. They've kind of subsided, and not for the good, even. I still maintain we cannot arrest ourselves out of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that point with anyone. In some things that Izzy says, I agree with. The whole idea of the prison system is not great. We in this country have the highest number of incarcerated people per capita.
And recidivism, yes.
And recidivism, well, we're not a whole different topic, but yes, recidivism. But it hasn't proven to be effective. again, that's another discussion. But again, going back to the very basic question, when did I know? I think when I first saw my father and uncle getting out of those cars, when they did have them, they were called Black Mariahs, believe it or not. Our squad cars in the 50s were black. They eventually changed colors, but they were black with a red bulb on the top. So my mother used to tell the story of when my father came home one time, I was playing, had my feet in the mud, and he pulled up, and I jumped up and ran in the house with mud on my feet, but because I saw my father in this squad car. So,
you know, for me, Dr. Cruz, I can't really point anything in me that I was born to be a police officer. I could just say that part. And, you know, I'm from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. You know, I had a bad run-in with Harrisburg police in the north, where supposedly racially everything is great, where me and a friend were accused of shoplifting, and I think I was 10 or 11 years old, something like that. We're stopped in a park, drove to where a white woman's purse was snatched. We're putting it back in the the only thing I remember about this police car is it stuck. It smelled bad. And, you know, the officers took us over there, and I knew going over there, even at that age, I knew if this white lady, and I knew it was a white lady, because had she been black, the officers probably wouldn't have taken the time. I'm sorry, officers, if your feelings get hurt, but I'm talking about my experience, and even at 10. And so we got there. She said, no, that's not them. We're 2 miles from my house. These officers did not put us in the car and take us home to our houses. They let us out. You're free to go. We walked the 2 miles home, which was fine in those days. You know, my father dealt with that. We'll talk about that part later. But then the reverse of that, my mother was from Waco, Texas. And in 1972, I was 10 years old. I went to Waco, Texas. My dad and mom managed to save up enough money. I remember we flew there on an airplane, but my parents only had enough money for us to take the train back. But I went to Waco, Texas, stayed with my relatives there that I'm just meeting, and I'm a 10-year-old kid. All of y'all got cowboys, ropes, and horses, and six-shooters, and I'm only going by what we see up north. And I get there, and I got to see ranches and everything, and I wanted a pair of cowboy boots, and my uncle brought me a pair before we got, and they had an old Greyhound bus station downtown. And, you know, I remember going to the bus station, we were leaving, and this bus driver, this white bus driver, actually held up the bus because I'm waiting for my uncle to bring my cowboy boots at 10 years old, and he did. But two Waco police officers came into the bus station, white officers. I went down, and I couldn't wait. They had the hats on, the little white hats, but they had the bullets around. They had all the Western stuff other than the hat. And these two officers, I never knew who they were, but they bent down on one knee, and they talked to me, and they let me touch the bullets going around their belt, and they talked to me, and I said, I'm going to be a Waco police officer. I told my mother that. She never lived to see it. And, you know, I went in the Air Force and did my time, Desert Storm and all that, and how I got to Waco is a whole other story. Unless you ask it, I'm not going to go into it. But Waco has always been my hometown because it was my mother's hometown. And when the cops in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania saw me as a suspect, those two white officers who are probably deceased by now because it's been God knows how many years, they saw me as a person in Texas, which is not the most racially friendly place in the world, but they took that time with me. They are the reason. Those two officers are the reason I went to Waco, Texas, from Yokota Air Base, Japan, to be a police officer. Have the highest civil service score in the history of that department, unless somebody scored higher since I left. But no one will ever be the first minority in the history of that department as Rookie of the Year but me. And those two white officers are the reason why. That's my answer.
All right, so tying into this, have a quick question that's huge. Is our criminal justice system broken, in your opinion? Is it broken?
Yes.
Has it always been broken, or has it ever been fixed?
It's always been broken. It was never meant to. It was never meant to be corrected, at least not from when I've read, and definitely not from what I've seen practiced. I mean,
that perspective, is there a fix?
Yes, there's a fix. And unfortunately, I'm going to say something that you're going to hear me mirror all the time. It goes back to one very base issue called voting. These laws that come onto the books, the laws that affect you, the policies, procedures, are all put in places by people that are elected and appointed, or appointed and elected, either one, that's the same thing. We have a co-host that always says that, you know, voting has done right so far. That still does not negate the fact that it could do better. Does need to be fixed without a doubt, without a doubt. As someone put on here, is the story about pipelines in prison true? Yes, it is. It's been proven to be true. The fact that there was a statistic that came up a few years ago that said that within a couple of years, X amount of percentage of black men in the state of Florida will all have prison records. The fact that they could even make that statement should be scared.
By 2023, we'll have a record in black men in the state of Florida. If you know anything about social control theory, you understand what those records do for employment opportunities and for socioeconomics and for being able to cross over socioeconomic standards.
Well, certainly. In addition to that, you know, this is this thing we call redlining. They all tie in. And for the life of me, what's disturbing is that with all the information that's out there, we still run into this thing called ignorance. I think one person asked me some time ago if there's one thing that, if I had a magic wand, what would I get rid of? And I say one word, racism, because racism leads to ignorance, which leads to everything else, which leads to that. But it's all, you know, because I hate you, I'm going to make you less of a human. Because I hate you, I disagree with you, I'm going to nullify anything that you do or anything that you create, or I might steal it. Depends on where you are.
You know, if I had to answer that, and I'm going to agree with Joe 100%, and then oxymoronically disagree with him in the statement I'm about to say, but those with deep thought who usually follow this show can understand what I'm about to say. Is the system broke? Absolutely not. It is not broken. This system is functioning exactly like it was designed to do, which is what Joe said. It is. This system was designed first off in America to catch runaway slaves. That was number one. We got to get those slaves that are running away. Then it was designed to catch bad guys that were robbing trains. And then we had to get a new victim. America's justice system is constantly in search of a new victim. No, it's not there. But it is operating like it was designed to do. This system cares little, very little, for middle-class people or minorities, period, point blank. And if you're white and you say, I'm okay because I'm white, in your quiet place out of social media where you feel that privilege card, some of y'all's privilege card is not as big as you think it is. You don't believe me? Ask your friends on meth how well their privilege card worked out. Because when we talk about the system, we have to understand, when we have a system that is built, and America's criminal justice system today is built on one thing, economics. The big boom today is for-profit prisons. That is where the money is. If you don't have asses and bunks and cells, nobody's making money. Period, point blank. Just like the school system. Dr. Corsi, you know, in the school system, people are paid by asses and desks. That's why they take attendance every morning.
Daily attendance.
Thank you.
ADA.
So when we had a criminal justice system that is designed on that platform, let's elevate it up and say, well, how do people get inducted into the criminal justice system? That's through law enforcement, men and women on the street. So what is the mandate that the officers on the street have to push? You are graded, rated, or whatever by how many arrests did you make? That rookie that made 20 traffic arrests is standing up in roll call getting a medal and everybody's clapping and he gets the upfront bullshit parking space. But guess what? While he was at the jail arresting 15, 20 people for a barking dog ticket, I was working the burglary motor vehicles in his beat. I was working the business burglaries in his beat. Some lady was getting the shit beat out of her by her husband. People were being raped. Buildings were being burglarized. Folks were getting murdered. See, policing has gotten so statistically driven. Because why? The state will tell you, hello, Texas. Let me put you on blast for a minute, state of Texas. Speed Step. Speed Step program, state funded, where we take officers who once they're off the city clock, sign up for 4 hours, they go out on the road, and all they do is write speeding tickets. Well, that's great. These officers are stopping speeders. Yeah, they are. Flip side of it is, those statistics go back to the department. Hey, that officer looked good. The department gets some revenue out of that, off of those tickets. Seatbelt Step, the same thing. So I say, I'm not knocking those programs. But hello, state of Texas, let me ask you this. Where is community policing step, since we always like to throw that term out when somebody's shot? Every chief can't wait to get to the microphone and talk about community policing. How about community policing step? How about domestic violence step? How about something that gives officers motivation to come in for, maybe I don't make an arrest on some kid that's being trafficked, but I get a lead that a detective like Joe can take and make an arrest. See, are we worried about statistics or worried about people? And I'm going to end with this, but if I could say anything, is the system broke? Yes, because politicians, police chiefs, city managers, mayors, they see statistics. The men and women on the street every day busting their ass out there in the heat, looking at these dead bodies for hours. They're not reading about them in a police report that they got to follow up on paper. They're there with it. They're talking in real time. We see those people as people. Why? Because oftentimes we knew them before they died. They're not a statistic to us. They're a person, if that makes sense.
So from an education standpoint, I would say substitute administrator for police chiefs and politicians. And you have the same thing, right? In mm-hmm. schools, we look at all children are numbers. We look at accountability standards and rates, and that's how we're, you know, making decisions. And we're driving ourselves into the ground on all sides. So with all that being said, what advice would you give a new police recruit, someone who's deciding to come into the field today, going into 2022, what advice would you give them based on your experience?
For me...
By the way, if y'all are watching, they have no idea what I'm asking you to say. So when Sam contacted me and said, you have free reign and I don't want to know what you're going to ask us. So if you see them look puzzled for a second, that's why, because they have no idea what I'm asking today. What advice do you have for a new police recruit?
Right off the bat, I'd have to tell them to be true to themselves. I would have to say to them, you know, err on the side of good judgment. Err on the side of unpopular design. I remember when I came up, my first night on the job, you know, of course, again, we're talking some time ago, there are always a big disgruntled guy. And I don't care what department you're in, there's always going to be the disgruntled guy. I ain't doing shit. You know, the department owes me, but I was fortunate. I had an FPO, field training officer, who was a Vietnam veteran. He was Hispanic descent. So his outlook was a little bit different than most, and he sat me down and just said, look, man, we're not here to promise, like, we're not here to fuck people up. We're here to protect you. And that's, you know, and then coming from a police background, I believe that. Now, that's the way I served. I wasn't there to enforce because you didn't like somebody, we're going to lock them up and beat them up, or, you know, because the drunks on the corner were just that. Hey, look, I might have a taste for them, depending on what they were drinking. So, again, if I was going to talk to my younger self, a new policeman, again, can be true to yourself and understand that the code of ethics, the code of moral conduct is a higher standard than the code of the police department.
You know, Joe, in everything you said, I agree. But I'll be much more simplistic. I will talk anybody into being a police officer. I did it for 25 years. I love the job because I love the people, not because I love that building and the toys they gave me, because I was paying for those toys, so they really didn't give me anything. But I can't tell you on this show that I enjoyed the brotherhood, because I didn't have a whole lot of that. We're going to be 100 in here. I didn't. But I would tell anybody who asked me today, would you recommend I be a police officer? I can't tell you to do or not do. Just as I had experiences in my life, a bad one in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, a good one in Waco, which led to me having a great career. And so I would say to them, before you say, I want to be a police officer because my uncle was, my dad was, it's what I want to do, before any of that, you go to your quiet place. And whatever God you pray to, Buddha, Allah, Satan, I don't care what God you pray to, you better go to a quiet place and figure out, are you really ready to handle this job? I have 25 years of murders up here, rapes up here, assaults up here, police brutality up here, stuff I had to walk through in the department and turn the other cheek so I didn't either beat the crap out of somebody or get rolled up. It's all up here. But that's human nature. If you can't take it, don't do it. This job is not for everybody. I don't care that your grandfather did it and his shield was on the wall. That ain't you. Okay, everybody don't make the team. You're going to leave this job. I don't care how stellar you think you are or how stellar your career was. When you walk away from this job, your phone ain't burning up with people saying, man, we miss you, wish you were back. It ain't. You know what you're stuck with? The retirement, the city ain't giving you jack shit. You earn that retirement. You're left with the nightmares. I still have nights where kids I know personally, some were drug dealers, some were good kids that were gunned down. But you know what? They were always good with me. And they're not here anymore because some rival drug dealer shot him down. And it's easy for society to say, well, he was a drug dealer. He deserved what he got. Really? Maybe, just maybe. And I'm talking to the street officers right now. I don't expect the community to understand what I'm about to say. But you street officers, real street officers, you hear me when I say this. My ass went home a lot of nights. Maybe because that 16-year-old said, no, that's Officer Mason. Don't mess with him. It wasn't my Glock, my vest. I got backup. I'm me. Look at me. I'm a hero. Blue Lives Matter. That's bullshit. I went home because that community let me go home. And when the community in Waco still doesn't know why I left, I'm not going to get into why I left. There's a lawsuit out there. That is what it is. But if I could tell officers, if you're not about the community, not white folks or Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, if you feel you got to walk into this job and equate any title with Lives Matter after, you need to check yourself. Because if you don't understand that life matters, go do something else. Go fix cars. There are people who like me, and there are people who don't like me. I don't give a damn if you were the city manager, the chief, city council person. If you ask me what I thought, you're getting it. Why did you got in the circle? He's abrasive. He's just, no, I'm not some mean, angry person. I'm dealing with a shitty situation in a community that doesn't have a pot to piss in and a window to throw it out of. They didn't create it. The city created it. You didn't give them the resources. You don't want to put the resources in. You don't want to spend time to solve it. And you want me to dress up their shitty situation and tell you it just doesn't smell good. Bullshit. It's shitty. We don't have enough supervisors and chiefs and city council people and city managers and mayors who have the balls, man or woman, to stand up and say, this for these people. And but for the grace of God, I could be these people. I don't need to see Joe's tooth pull to know it hurts. I know it doesn't. I don't want it to happen to me. So anybody coming into this job, you need to think long and hard. You're not coming into a blue family where everything is warm and fuzzy and we get nice guns. You're going to see some bad shit. And you're going to see some horrible shit. You're going to see the worst human beings can do to each other. And the violence they do transcends Black Lives Matter and white lives. It's blue lives. It transcends all that shit. You know what you get when you're a police officer? Especially on a midnight shift like I did for 25 years, you get reality, period, point blank. Not CNN next morning, let's criticize the office. If you can't take it, because there is no practice squad in policing. There's no second string, there's no timeout, and there's no substitutes. You go to that issue in real time, and you're on the field. You got the ball. So do you insulate yourself with the public or do you insulate yourself with the police department? Everybody in the police department, officers, listen to me, and y'all know I'm true. You ain't going to light up my Facebook and you're not going to say Stan's right. If you think everybody in that police department loves you and likes you and we're a blue family, that's a lie because the fact of the matter is a lot of officers screwing a lot of other officers' wives, and I'm going to leave that alone. I dropped that bomb. I'm going to let that one lay.
I'm going to leave it there, too. But I will, since I'm Dr. Behavior, point out that mental health component that you both hit on. And from a trauma standpoint, we've talked about this on the show, that the shows that I've been on, of just how limiting we are in providing support. Do we truly understand the effects of what officers encounter and what is actually happening on the inside of officers, or do we choose
hell no.
the ostriches?
Hell no. Chicago right now, as of today, leads the country in police-related suicides. Across the board, police suicides are number two. In fact, they're number one. The military is right behind us. Now, that's very interesting when you look at this phenomenon of PTSD. Often PTSD is associated with wartime activities. Well, what are you saying now? I mean, that's reality.
You just hit the nail on the head on that one, right?
I hope. I can tell you that I've had my struggles, and my family knows it. That's why you have such a high rate of alcoholism and, again, suicide. If you don't have these systems in place, you see what happens. And I'm trying to be polite as I can. Not that I'm a polite person, but you also start seeing the results of this behavior, not behavior, but the results of this phenomenon in the fact that police departments are having a hard time recruiting across the country. Nobody wants to do this job based on these attributes. I mean, just think about this. Oh, I can make this kind of money. And I can go home and become an alcoholic or kill myself. That's the hell of recruiting.
Well, Joe, you know, we bring people and we promote this job first off.
Well, let's not talk about promotion.
No. I'm not talking about systemic promotion. We promote this job as something we want you to do. We sell it as you're a hero. We sell it as you're the best of the best. Go out there and give your life for the cause. That's what we throw out there. But then we take people, whether they're black or white or Hispanic or Islamic or whatever, and we put them in our little departmental categories and not allow them to be who the hell they brought to the job, while we're always happy as a city to go, look how many Arabian people we have in the police department. Look how many blacks we have. Look how many Asians we have. We're glad to promote that. Just don't be too who you are at the job. And the fact of the matter is, if I'm good enough to come to that job and who I am, let me be who I am at the job, because the job isn't doing or addressing that particular community. But I think for me, you know, I think mental health absolutely is not, it's just 100% not recognized. It's not dealt with. And I'm going to put that blame on three entities. And one of them, politicians, if you listen, they're going to cringe and want to get off this show, but your ass is getting called out too. I don't care if you're a black city council person or not. First one is the police unions aren't doing what they can do. If we can elect presidents, we can get mental health treatment for police officers. That's the first thing. Federal law across the board, there's no reason why police officers should not get federally mandated mental health treatment anywhere in this country. You send us the nightmares for 20, 25, 30, 40 years, but you don't want to pay for it. Okay, next one is all these politicians, these police chiefs who don't advocate for it within their own departments. And the third thing is, you know, the officers and the departments themselves, you officers are screaming for it. You want to fold the flag and cry, and we want all the amenities, the bagpipes to come with it, but we're choosing to be, which I oftentimes say, oftentimes in relation to the black community in some instances, because I'm going to be transparent, I talk about being a professional victim. Police need to stop being a professional victim. You don't get to be in fear of your life at everything in a job you're getting paid to do for fear, and then when you something happens to you, you want to blame everybody else but your unions, your chief, your city manager, your mayor, your city council. I don't give a damn. Black, white, rich, poor, I voted, Republican, Democrat. I don't care. All of them are equally corrupt. They have a hand in that. And until we wake up, if we really care about police officers as individuals, if you don't give a damn about the profession, that's you. But if you got an uncle that's a police officer, start holding your city council people accountable. If for nobody else, hold him accountable for your uncle, because it might be your uncle that blows their brains out or your aunt. So no, we're not paying attention. Let me grab a caller real quick. They called in from the 509 area code 9130. How you doing?
Hey, Stan, it's Sean. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, brother, we're good.
Hey, well, you know, I just wanted to respond to the question that was asked because I thought it was a great question. What do you ask? Or what advice do you give to a new recruit? And, you know, I think if people step back and take a look at the show and the people on the show, there's one thing that they all have in common, and especially you, Stan, especially you, Joe, and Jim, and everyone else, is, you know what, you always learn to manage people and not a process or manage crime. There's a big difference between the two, because when we start managing reports and we start managing crime, we dehumanize the people that are either being victims or actually the people that are committing them. And my advice is learn that. You know, we don't get people better through Safe Call Now because, you know, we put them through a process and, you know, they come out the other side because they followed everything and they followed the law. No, we connected with them as a human being and we changed their lives. So we manage people and not processes. And that's where I think people lose it. Where does community policing come from? Stan got to go home at night because he was managing a community. He wasn't managing the reports. He was managing the community. That's why you were so successful. So if I could give any advice that I would have learned in my career, learn to manage people and learn to connect and develop a relationship with them.
I appreciate you, brother. Dr. Cruz, you got the controls to get Sean. Your mic is still open because, you know, what you do, you got a lot to add in. So feel free to come back in, but I got to go back to the host.
You said it correctly, Sean. Thank you. It's connection. I think the point that both Joe and Stan bring up is about people. And when we pay attention to statistics over individuals, mm-hmm. That's the one time that I moved from collective to individual. I normally go from individual to collective, right? On this time, I'm going to go backwards. And I think you make an excellent point in that we have to be able to manage individuals. Discernment is something that Joe brought up, and I think Sam has mentioned as well, being able to have some control over who you arrest and how you engage with people and doing what's best for the community and being able to trust officers to be able to do that. I think your point of connection ties in beautifully to that. So thank you. Is there anything else that you want to add to that?
No, that was just it. Luckily, I've learned that from Stan and Joe and Jim and the people on the show. I mean, that is the common thread. And I look back at that and, you know, a lot of people, you know, in America could really, and agencies, you know, are so stat driven, but when we use stats and sometimes we lose our direction of what it is that we're really out there doing. And these people on the show, Stan and Jim, Joe and Jim and those guys have never lost that direction. They've always been people focused, and that's why they're successful.
Absolutely. I concur completely with that.
But, you know, if I can add real quick, Corsi, to his point, I watch a lot of these auditing videos that go on, you know, the people with the video cameras, First Amendment audits. And there's one guy that particularly really sticks out to me. I haven't met him yet, but he really sticks out. Long Island audit. This guy is extremely polite. Extremely. More so than I ever would be. But he goes out, he does his audits. He's not one of these ones that's an asshole and picks on the cops. But he goes out and he does his audits, and he always is met with ego. Not law, not practice, not even policy. Out now, they will, and I look at these videos, and God bless this brother, but I get so aggravated because I'm like, this is my profession. When will they ever get it through their heads? What is wrong with the municipalities that don't say citizens on public property can film anything they can see from public? Leave them alone. No, they don't have the ID. It amazes me because it's a simple video. It may be that one department, but that transcends to all officers everywhere and all over the place. So why isn't things like that, the little things that are mentally bearing down, and you know, people may say, well, where's going with it? I'm going with it because there are officers sitting in roll calls across America in Idaho or California, somewhere where Long Island audit isn't going to go to. They're not the money to go there. But they're going to get confronted with that video. They're going to have to deal with somebody who brings up the same questions that they don't know how to handle because the departments will not deal with the fact that citizens are now saying, I'm aware of my rights. I'm now going to challenge you. It's not adversarial. It's their right. So if we're not willing to train our officers and give them the tools to be the best they can be so we can weed out the ones that don't need to be on the street, what do we do? Because these auditors are not going anywhere. And some of them are absolute assholes. Some of them are. But then you do have your good ones out there. And I'm going to only name Long Island Audit because that's the one that I've watched the most. And I admire the way this guy handles himself. So at what point do we train to where we don't look like fools all the time?
Well, let me just stop right there. You hear me talk about this all the time. There's this thing called common sense. The problem that we have, that we've taken away, again, it goes back to another issue that I spoke on earlier, and that is discretionary value. Common sense with discretion, if we taught it, would be taken further than you would ever imagine. First of all, students have the right to do a lot more. Let me say this. I said this on the show before, and I'll say it again. Police officers have this thing backwards. Let me tell you what I mean. First of all, you hear the statement, we are not social workers. That's bullshit. Yes, you are. Yes, you are, and I understand that. The problem is that they are taught in the academies across the board. I've been to a few of them. They're taught that we are the automatons. We are those heroes with the capes, but you don't have the discretion of a Superman. Be Superman, but don't have a discretion. Be what we tell you to be, and still wear the cape and be bulletproof. That's not always the case. other issue is this. When you decide to take an action, be able to justify. Now, in your Lilliputian mind, if you can't justify it, then don't do it. But it goes back to the word again, if it's common sense. So it's a double entendre. But I think that we have to get back to some part of what is it that the people want and what they deserve and what they need.
But Joe, let me ask this. I'm going at the police chiefs on this one and administrations. They're not getting a pass from me. Because you know what? Some of these people that sit behind these desks, certainly not speaking for all. I'm going to talk personal experience. I could call out names. Not going to do it because they know who they are when they listen to this tomorrow because they troll me. But you know what? We got some people that came into this 2 years on the street and they put their ass behind the desk, babied them, coddled them, gave them a pamper, put them in a stroller, and they become administrators and then they become chiefs. And they don't object shit about the street or the people in the streets. And they don't care. Their allegiance is to who are they around? Shrimp cocktail people, city council people, you know, the city manager. They jump when the city manager calls, but when the officer said, we don't have winter coats and it's freezing. Well, it's not in the budget. That's the, I almost dropped the F-bomb. That's their excuse. You know, that's why I do this show. I am not anti-police. I am anti-police bullshit and anti-police bad police. And you know what? There are men and women out on that street. Yes, there are bad shit that happens. Yes, people are being shot wrongfully. Yes, there is police brutality. But when we look at all the officers on the street, I'm not talking detectives and SWAT teams and gang task force and all these special interest groups who not only enjoy the patrol part of the budget, but they get their special interest part of the budget too. I'm talking about the men and women in patrol who got to go out there every night with very little support from their departments and bullshit chiefs who throw out pleasantries. Oh, the community loves what y'all do. Do a fucking, I threw it out, $10, I'll pay. Do an email. But they don't care enough to go down there and tell those men and women who are out there every day making that street work, keeping the crime down, oh, you don't have enough arrests. I don't, but nobody got killed in my beat. What do you want, chief? What do you want? You want me to arrest a bunch of people? I'm not on the street. Then I got two murders. You want to bitch at me about two murders? Let's get real. I mean, we're both cops. We're here. Let's be real about it. That's the bullshit. The street officers are caught in the middle of political semantics behind bullshit police chiefs who never worked the street, have no street experience. They've been coddled and hand-fed and bridled to be the public image of the department. When the fact of the matter is those men and women doing the hard work and heavy lifting on the street, they aren't always on Facebook and YouTube. They're not invited to the council meetings and the Christmas parties because when every police department in this country is having a Christmas party, guess what? There's men and women out on the street busting their ass at murders and traffic accidents while you all eat shrimp and cocktails. And then you tell them, we put something up in the roll call room for you later. When the hell are they going to get to it? Calls are backed up on the screen. That part. So if you want to rebuild your police department, if you really want to have real good police, the hell with SWAT and detectives and whether they got comfy ties and Folgers coffee, why don't you go down there and say to the officers on the street, are you warm in the winter? Do you have decent boots so you're not spending $150 out of your pocket for boots that you're ruining one night in a flash flood? That aggravates me. The public doesn't know that. It's not their fault. They don't know it because we don't tell them. We are victims of our own. I don't want to speak out against the blue. The hell with that. Those men and women I worked with weren't blue. They were people. Those people I work with on the street are people. We have to stop this allegiance and just deal with what is right. Sorry about that.
Thank you. So I want to transition a little bit. I told you we're going to do kind of past, present, future kind of thing. So I'm curious, do either one of you have any musical icons? Do you have anybody that when, if you're going to go to a go-to, that's your go-to? Who is it for you?
Big Time. Big Time. Big Time. Well, my father's family comes out of New Orleans. My mother's family comes out of Alabama. My father's family is jazz musician. I've actually sat around when Coltrane and Gene Ammons were alive, actually, in my house, played my uncle. My father played instruments. Only musical attribute I have is a mouth on a phone. Mouth on a phone, that's about it. But for me, it's jazz. I've got a real with some stuff dating back to 1928, some of my father's stuff from Duke Ellington. So I'm a big jazz guy.
And you pull those records out. Do you have your record player? Do you have your
I got real to real.
There
we go. I've got some stuff. I had a great uncle. My father's brother had a group in 1928. In which he introduced a jazz player named Jelly Roll Morton. So my uncle was the reason that Jelly Roll Morton came around. I've got a recording from 1928, Frankie Frankel and his Frankovics from Louisiana. That was my father's brother. But it's a whole line. I mean, my mother was a musical, even though she was a lab tech, supervisor of a lab tech, but she used to sing. So my fallback is jazz.
Jim said you have a phonograph.
Jim's right. He's right. I've got the old big troll in his call. So I'll give Jim a trust.
I would say for me, without a doubt, 100%, nobody's ever going to sway me anywhere else. You can talk about your Michael Jackson. It was Prince. Because not only was Prince a musical genius and a phenomenon that could play any instrument on the stage, but in his personal life, what I connect with him with is that nobody really knew him. Everybody, he had this way of making everybody feel they knew him, but at the end, very few people really did. You know, he once wrote a lyric. I would die for you. He said, I'm not your lover. I'm not your man. I am something that you'll never understand. But yet his music spoke to conditions, and it spoke to environments and situations. And he didn't care whether you understood or not. And you know what? A lot of us danced to it, and we didn't understand. And I admired the fact that he was able to address a lot of social issues. And for anybody who has never Googled Prince, thinking on social issues in respect to black people. He was one of the biggest spokespeople for the condition of black America. He didn't go out there and didn't do it bombastically, but he did it eloquently. And he was willing to do it and say, I can take that heat. I'll fade it because I've been there. You can love Prince and you can love Prince's music, but you can't get past the fact Prince was black. You got to deal with that. And if that is an issue to you, that's an issue for you to work through. So I love the fact that he was saying, I am who I am. Look at my surroundings. Look at the people around me. I like good people. I'm fighting for truth. I'm writing my music. I'm doing what I do. And he played a genre of everything. Gospel, jazz, funk, whatever you want. Prince played it. And his audience were diverse. And it really, Prince was one of the few places you could ever go, or you'd have as many black and white and old and young. Everybody's in one room to listen to this guy play. In other words, to listen to what he's saying. And that, to me, for a performer to transcend from just being a musical artist into being able to take all these different people and bring them in a room where nothing is in the room but love. Nothing. Nobody can tell me about the arrest at a Prince concert, the riot at a Prince concert, the fight at a Prince concert. The only other group that came close to that was Earth, Wind & Fire. That's old school. It wasn't about black or white or right or left. Or Prince had a way of bringing everybody together and saying, my God, y'all here, what about this? So what are you going to do? And everybody did it, but they left knowing nothing about the individual. It's not important. It's not about the messenger. It's about the message. To me, that's the way he lived his life. I'm a 1,000% Prince fan, and a lot of times that's I listen to his music a lot of times when I'm thinking of what should I do or where should I go on a topic, or we get a show topic we're going to talk about, and I got my feelings, and I know I understand my feelings, but I don't understand how to convey them. I'll listen to an hour and a half of Prince with some headphones on. Can I come away with how I need to do it?
Let me ask, I've got one guy. We have a club, you said up here, it's called Checkerboard. And it's a blues club. And on any given night, you can see anybody from Sonny Boy Slim to Mick Jagger to anyone who's blues, kings, queens, Coco Taylor. I mean, just walk in and start jamming. So I doubt that, because, again, where did the migration hit? Came to Chicago. He had the blues and jazz on at the same time. So those two may be probably my answer.
Okay. All right, kind of a transition question a little bit. What was your greatest childhood lesson, and who taught it?
Wow.
I'll go first, Joe, while you need to think.
Yeah.
For me, it was, I think, my greatest childhood lesson, outside of the story I talked about with Waco PD and moving into, policing. I think it was when I was working with my dad on the car, because when you're poor, you can't afford mechanics. Hold the light straight. Don't drop the light. Mark the line straight. You know, little nagging things that aggravated the hell out of me. Why is he yelling at me because I brought the wrong socket? Or why is he yelling at me because I'm cold and the light is trembling? And then I came later to understand, you know, after I was in the military, of course, and my father passed away while I was in the military, but what he was doing through that trauma, that was trauma to me. I could be outside playing ball. I had 1,000 things I'd rather do than to be helping my dad fix a sump pump or do something, fix the car or do whatever. That's the kid's mind. Why am I here? But I look now at all the things I can do because he taught me the right socket. He taught me I'm not a master carpenter, but I don't need to pick up the phone every time something breaks. You know, I didn't like helping my mom in the kitchen. That's girl stuff. Why do I need to do that? Well, guess what? I'm married now. But if I wasn't, I don't need no woman to cook for me. I know how to do that. I iron my own clothes. My parents taught me, my mother taught me, and then the military taught me. So I am a 100% self-sufficient man. I don't need any woman. You can look good and you stack, but if you can't cook, you're no good. What do I need you for? Why do you need anybody in your life that can do that which you can do for yourself? Don't settle. So I think my father teaching me, because my mother couldn't have taught me what she taught me without my father first teaching me how to do basic carpentry, basic electrical work, basic auto mechanics, basic lawn care. My parents trained me to be self-sufficient. And so I would say that's my heroes.
I'll carry on with that, and then I'll ask you, Joe. There's that meme that says, you can't hurt my feelings. I held a flashlight for my dad.
That's it. 100.
I identify with that. What about you, Joe? What's your greatest childhood lesson that you taught it?
For me, I might just flip on, stand on that one. For me, it was my mother. My mother taught me to be a kinder, gentler person. She taught me the gentler side of life. She was a person who told me, made me not call, in my house, calling someone a lie was akin to swearing. So,
that was boring.
You know, that's, don't do it. You don't want to do that, son. I think that my respect for mothers and women in general, the life lessons that my mother gave me, should be my hero. My father certainly did his job, but for me, it was my mother.
Thank you. So any regrets in career or life? I've asked you to kind of look backwards. I've asked you to look at your career. I've asked you to so anything that you can share as you look back and say, man, I really wish I would have done that this year.
Definitely. I wish I had furthered my education. I wish I had tested that. I would have probably got my PhD. My doctoral. and I might still go back. But certainly I think that I probably could have been. I was never a joiner, so I've been a loner most of my career. So I wasn't in those groups that had the connections. So most of the time I had to fend for myself. In this job, I think Stan would agree that if you're not in the clique, you're either in the clique or you're not. And those not in the clique don't move. So you can tell all the truth you want, but is it going to be heard? But the fact is, again, my mother told me, no matter what you do, tell the truth and keep going. So I think the adage just tell the truth to shame the devil. Well, I shame the shit out of
him. Yeah.
You know, for me, you know, this is, and I like that I told you ask anything you want. Because I, you know, the most important thing to me is just being you, you know. I look at my career, and could I have changed something? You know, there's a guy, a kid, Jakamian Richardson, and saw a little bit of dope in Waco here and there. He wasn't no major player, but I knew him since he was a little kid. And I came to work one day, and they told me, I heard guys in roll call bragging. They weren't talking about it. They were bragging. Yeah, Jakamian got shot. And I heard in roll call he was at a particular hospital in Waco. So after we got out of roll call, I told the sergeant, let me take a couple hours off. I need to go up to the hospital. And I went up to see him. And he was able to talk to me. His family was there, and I spoke to them, and I go in to see him and ask him how you doing. There wasn't no read your rights bullshit. It wasn't all that shit. I didn't care about the legal shit. I cared about him. This kid wasn't a drug dealer to me. He was my kid. Yeah, he sold dope. He wasn't shooting people up. He wasn't a stick-up kid. Yeah, technically he's violating the law, but so are a lot of your fucking politicians out here with ties on that part. But, you know, I was in there, and he's laying in the hospital bed, and he's talking to me. I asked him what happened. He told me. And, you know, I left. I said, well, I'm gonna come back and see you tomorrow. You going to be okay? Yeah, I'll be fine. So I left and went back to work, and I go home, and I talked to his sister before I left and his mom, and I go home, and then I get a call the next day. You know, he's not doing good. And I'm like, what? You know, he was fine yesterday. Well, he wants to see you. So I go up and I talk with his sister and everything. I get to the hospital and, you know, I got to go to work that night. So, of course, I'm in all the police crap. And I go in and, you know, he wants them to turn the machines off. So I said, you know what's going to happen. He said, yeah. He couldn't talk. He had a thing in his throat. He nodded. And I said, are you okay with God? He nodded. And I didn't want to ask him this. It's the one question I didn't want to ask. I said, you want me to stay here with you? And he squeezed my hand. He said, yeah. And I stayed with him. And I watched this kid change his life when it counted. And when I got to work, of course, the next day, everybody's got the hero tales. Yeah, Jakamian Richardson is dead. They didn't know him. Maybe not violent offender. this kid respected me more than some of the people I worked with. That is the code of the street. Jakamian Richardson is my kid. He's not a victim to me. When I do this show and I talk about policing, I transcend the bullshit, the egos, the manhood. I went to his funeral, and I spoke at his funeral. And when I walked in there, all the drug dealers sat on one side, the family sat over here, and the ones who were just dressed nice and didn't know any better sat in the middle. I said, see, this right here, we can't even come together. We're all here to celebrate him, but we can't even come together. Yes, he's so dumb. Yeah, the prima donna part of society say, throw his ass away, to hell with him. But I'm evangelical Christian, God forgets. But just not him. The officers will say, oh, he was a drug dealer, good for him, applaud, goodbye. He was a human being that God is so graceful to me. I had a chance to meet him when he was a young kid. Could I change everything he did in life? No. Did I change a lot of what he did in life? I absolutely did, because he wasn't shooting nobody. Because I could go to his house where he and his brother were and say, get everybody's ass on the front porch. I'm going to talk to everybody right now in East Waco. There's folks on Waco on here who will tell you. And you know what? They come out, yes, sir, Officer Mason. Yes, sir. These kids, dope slingers, scumbags, thugs, hoodlums, there's not a doubt in my mind that some of these kids would have took a bullet for me before some of the people I even worked with would have. Real talk. That part, if we're going to do this, let's get real. Let's talk really about the streets and the relationships and respect. I may not agree with their lifestyle. Their lifestyle may be illegal. I don't get paid to put you in jail off what I know. I get paid to put you in jail off what I can prove. And it goes back to what I said. I went home in Waco, Texas, a lot of nights from a lot of the stuff I was in, not because I'm a hero, not because I'm so great, but because that community, the good and the bad and the underbelly, let me go home. My kids went to school and were never harassed because the good, the bad, and the underbelly said, let it be so. Not sin. Cops, you ain't heroes. You're paid to do a job. You're humans. Some of this hero rhetoric is built on the backs of the respect that even those who despise you give you to say, I'm going to let you make it today, Patty. I'm going to let you make it. You don't even know it, but you going home tonight because I said so. Let's stop being good guys and bad guys and just be guys and figure out why. Can I help you? I may not agree with what you do. My job is to put you in jail. Your job is not to get caught. That's fine. But when we get to that point, we don't have to have a shootout. That kid, Jakamian Richardson, changed my entire life. He was my first clear-cut view of the inside of policing. I'm there racking up accolades, arrest, and I'm loving it. And we're one blue light. And then when I saw and heard, I'm working in neighborhoods. These officers I worked around knew how I felt about people in the neighborhood and my connection to them. But just the fact they would joke and laugh, I never forgot that. Of everything in my career, that is the one thing that is a burning stone in my heart for Waco PD right now. The way some of those people laughed at his death. Knowing I took off. Because they knew where I was. Trust me, on the midnight shift, when you got to work another officer's calls because they're at work, but you're getting a burglary and everything, they know where you are. They knew why I was there. But you want me to be broken up because of something that happens to an officer somewhere. But here's a kid that was close to me as my son, whose hand I held while he died, not because I wanted to be in that room and hold it, but because he wanted me to be in that room and hold it. bet says, I have changed my life. And if everybody in the world I want in here, I want you. If you can't walk out of there and know that your struggle for equality and justice and trust and truth is right, I don't need Joe Biden or nobody to tell me that what we do on this show isn't 100%, because Kamia Richardson underscored it a long time ago. Sorry about that.
Thank you. No, thank you for it. You know, I'll give you my sidebar on this. I've spent my entire career in Waco, in North Waco and East Waco, and I have never felt more protected. I have never felt more respected. I tend to drive nicer cars, and people have made comments to me about working in those areas. And what I tell people is they see my car and they know that I'm here for their community and they take care of me for it. I have never, ever felt uncomfortable or unsafe ever working in North Waco or East Waco. So I share the same sentiment about the goodness of the people in Waco. I have nothing but love for my experiences here. So God bless you on yours as well. I just have a couple more quick questions. What do y'all think we need more of? And what do you think we need less of? This is a more or less question. What do we need more of? And what do we need less of?
Well, from my point of view, we need more humility and less pig-headedness. That probably is not the correct term. At least from what I've seen, the fact that police officers don't understand, again, that they are a social worker and that they've got this thing backwards by respect. I'm sure you've heard me say, but I'll repeat it. By virtue of you having a badge and a gun on doesn't give you automatic respect. However, you must respect the community. And a lot of these young guys have that shit so ass backwards. Even some of the veterans. You know, I've heard them talk, oh, they, you know, they got to respect. No, they don't. No, they don't. You got to respect them. You know, and the other misunderstood idea is that respect is automatically given. No, it's not. It's earned. Do they always have to give it to you? No, but you must. You have to give it to the people, no matter what. I don't give a shit what you think or what you've been taught. You have to respect the people. And again, this is the problem with the mantra with the new modern policing is that they don't teach that. They don't incorporate that in the ethical core, into the candor, into the backbone of what we do. They don't teach that we are social workers in what we do and how we speak to people. If I can go to a scene, I mean, old veterans I had a guy, I think I told the story a long time ago. I had a guy I worked with named Billy Kidd. Billy Kidd was so, this guy would make ice melt. He was so smooth. He going into a situation, didn't need a gun. He'd come to work, I'm like, where's your gun? He's like, I don't need one, son. I'm Billy the Kid, don't you know? And I had to find out. You know, he won the situation. Just completely disarming him just by his mannerisms. And that's why I tried to emulate. Now, did I do a great job? No. No. But certainly a lot more humility and less of the I'm right, just by the virtue of me having a gun and having this position.
I think we need a lot less of cops being heroes all the time. Yes, you take a risk. NFL players take the field every Sunday. And guess what? They're getting paid a lot of money to do it. And people say cops don't get paid a lot of money. No, we don't. But when we look at the median income in our communities, we're doing okay. Every Sunday could be your last. The fans owe you nothing. The same with the citizens. Respect is earned. Because you have a badge and a gun does not mean somebody has to fall over and kiss your ass. And I'm sorry, it simply doesn't. I wish that if we had more of, I wish we had more understanding to when we see the black community that is distrustful of policing, instead of saying constantly, They should have just complied. 25 years of doing the job. I'm scared of police. Okay? I am scared of modern-day police. Tell me, I wish that this same society, not just white folks, but these black moderates, step out of your economic comfort zone. Because one of the things I've noticed, even, and I'm not going to just call out white folks. I don't do that. I'm going to call out these black ones, too. The ones who tend to be, so the police are doing nothing wrong, why don't they submit? You tend to live in a high, expensive neighborhood with the white folks. Let's just go on and be real about it. Where the police are your security guards. They're not even cops. They just wave you through your gate and open it, dump your trash and make you feel good. I wish police, more officers, could take who they were before they started this job and say, who do I want to be in this job? And then forecast, who will I be when I leave this job? I wish we had chiefs who weren't scared of the two-year elected city council person. You're a chief of police, and you're scared of somebody that's going to be there a year and a half. You're scared to disagree with them for 2 years or say kick rocks. And as some of these chiefs, you're scared to say, get in the car with me. Come ride with me. Let me show you what my officers are talking about. You're full of shit, city council person, and here's why. Come ride with me. Your district. Let's go. 12:30 at night. Come on. That's bullshit. Chiefs need to ball up. Stop being politicians, police chiefs, and start being police officers. If the officers on the street got to take shit and defend themselves, you need to start taking shit and defending those officers. And stop bending over backwards for these politicians. These city council people today, Joe and I, we talk about voting on the show. Some of them are in there only because they're black. And some of them are in there only because they're white. They're both dumb as a box of rocks. Don't give a damn about the experience of either side. They're in there because folks today, we're so divisive. Well, this person's white. They must have my best interest. They're black. They must have. And that's how we vote. They're Republican or Democrat. We don't know shit about the issues. Dr. Corsi, we said last Saturday, we don't go to school board meetings anymore. We don't go to city council meetings anymore. I wish the public would wake the hell up, stop listening to MSNBC and Fox, and grow a pair. Before you bitch out the police department and want to defund the police department, how about you take your ass down to city council or down into the records building, get a copy of the budget, and see where your money's being spent. You're going to find out when you look at that big-ass police budget, you'll find ain't a whole lot going to those men and women on the street. It's called patrol. When y'all get the budget, look in that section called patrol. That part. It ain't going to them. Your chiefs are traveling all over the world, going to all these conferences and meetings and eating shrimp cocktail, and they don't come down and tell us jack shit. We just throw the chiefs out of the office. And that's not every chief. I'm talking your middle Waco-sized departments and up. They go to all these seminars. But your officers on the street can't get trained. The chief ain't going to shoot nobody. Most of them don't even carry a damn gun. If they do, they probably couldn't hit shit when they pull it out. I'm just being honest. But this is you, the public. While y'all are criticizing the officers on the street, why aren't you criticizing the city council that approved the ordinance the officers enforcing? And then where was your ass on first and second reading? Why aren't you criticizing the city manager who won't hold the chief accountable? Why aren't you criticizing the mayor who's the city manager's boss? See, it trickles down. And I'm very critical of policing. I think policing needs to change. But I will not throw the men and women on the street under the bus for all this shit that everybody, America wants to blame. Every man and woman on the street they see, you're a racist and it's your fault. No, it's not. Look at the people giving them orders. Look at the daytime, and then if you want to find them, if their ass is behind a desk, that's a good head start. And I'm sorry, Dr. Cruz.
No, well, there was no sorry on that one. It just brings me to my last and final question that I have prepared for both of you. What's your legacy? What do you hope to be remembered for?
Wow. You first.
I just hope to be here for a while. No, good question. I would say to me, I don't ever want to be quoted in anything. I don't ever want to be mentioned as the spark or catalyst for anything. I want people, if I say something or do something that motivates you to the best you can be, whether it's a drug dealer, whether it's a car salesman, whether it's a politician, it doesn't matter. What you do may be legal or illegal, but if I can motivate you to be the best you feel you can be, and that's, people are going to go, what does it mean drug dealer? If I can make you the, there are drug dealers that have done more for communities than people y'all voted for. Hard fact. That's why it took so long to get John Gotti. But if I can make you the best you or influence you to be the best you, and if God is so good that I get to sit back and watch you move and transcend and elevate and be you, I don't need to be mentioned. I don't need to be a recognized part of who you are. That's you. That's what we need to do. Sometimes in life, some of us, we don't need to be the escalator. I'm content to be the step, the wooden step, the one that creaks that nobody may not even remember. They're just glad to get off of it. But if I got you to the next level, I don't need to be the escalator in Macy's with the glitter. And somebody remembers, I don't need to be remembered. I was here. God didn't call me here to be remembered. He called me here to make progress. He didn't tell me to be polite about it. I have to fulfill what Stan is here to do. If I can bring people on the way, I do it. Am I saying I'm definitively right about everything I do? No, I don't know that I'm right about this show or anything that I do. I don't know. But I know I trust God, and God tells me you're on point, so that's good enough for me.
Bill, what about you? What do you hope your legacy is?
I have to mirror Stan to a certain extent. I think the whole idea is that people will remember me for moving in the way that God says it's supposed to move, and that's exactly along the same line as Stan, and that is I don't have to be remembered necessarily for a damn thing. But the fact that we moved, we were able to make a difference in somebody's life. You know, it's like the story of the guy walking along the beach, and there's all these starfish out there. And he picked up the one starfish, and the other guy said, "What are you doing that?" He said, "Well, I'll make a difference with that one." So I'm that guy. That's what I think my mission is.
All the millions of the starfish, why does it matter? You just keep tossing them. There's millions of them. What difference does it make? It matters to that one.
Amen.
Thank you all for doing this with me today and allowing me to take the reins a little bit and ask the questions that I want to ask.
No, but before you wrap it up, though, we got to tell you something.
Okay.
You know, Behind the Blue Curtain has always been the people show. It's not Stan's show or Joe's show. You know, you guys can call in and comment, and you know, we don't have any sponsors. We don't look for sponsors. There's no GoFundMe to this show. We pay for everything we do. But we recognize, you know, talent and need and what makes this show grow. Not for Stan or Joe or YouTube fame, and that's all semantical bullshit. There's too much of that today. I think that's why we never really get to sustainable truth, because everybody wants likes and clicks. On this show, it's not how many people like us or click on us. It's about who clicks and likes. And so Dr. Cruz, I asked her today, I felt like I'm proposing marriage.
You are.
I asked her, yeah, if she would be a co-host on our show because her expertise is needed. And she said yes.
Thank you.
So,
bravo.
So we're welcoming her. You're now officially branded, and you're part of the show.
You,
and you know what, Joe? No co-host has ever interviewed us.
Right.
So...
And you turned down quite the interview in your career. Mr. Stan. So thank you for allowing me and trusting me, especially blind. You got no energy schedule. That was some trust for you right there. You too, Joe.
You know what? I don't know if Facebook kicked us off at the last minute. We certainly, what did we violate somebody's copyright laws again? Like you told me Saturday, you violated your own copyright laws. You know. But anyway, we got 90% of this hardware problem. Anyway, Dr. Cruz, thank you so much. That was good. That was good.
Thank you.
We appreciate
it. I'm looking forward. We'll keep talking about the topics that matter, people.
All right. We're going to get ready for Saturday. Joe, thank you.
We're doing Sunday, right, because it's Christmas?
Oh, yeah. We're going to do Sunday. We're not doing Saturday. We're going to do Sunday.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah, because I'm going to have a house full of relatives and, you know, I do a Joker thing and just kind of paint on that thing, you know. way up here around my ears, pretend I'm a Kardashian, you know. But,
enjoy the rest of the week. Thank you so much for taking time tonight and sharing your truth and your stories with us and just your expertise. And God bless you both for everything that you do for this community.
Same to you. And welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard, Doc.
Thank you.
Later, Davis.
Good night.
Good night. We'll see y'all soon.